Welcome to this real-time audio disc introduction to RISC OS. These tape and disc materials have been designed to give you a clear insight into how your new Acorn computer works. But above all, we want to put you in the driving seat from the start. By the end, you'll have tried everything out for yourself, and you'll be well on the way to using your Acorn computer the way the experts use it. If you're used to using a computer, you'll finish in no time at all. And you'll quickly see what makes your Acorn computer so much more advanced than more traditional systems. Even if you've been using another Acorn computer, you may still benefit from a proper guided tour of the whole system, a chance to sit back and see how all the parts fit together as a whole. On the other hand, if you're completely new to modern computing, you may want to spend longer on the course, and that's fine. Real time is designed to let you set the pace, so take just as long as you need to complete all the sessions in your own time. Now, of course, I can't be there to check up on you while you're working through these tapes. So if something unexpected happens, just rewind the tape and listen again. Whatever happens, don't let me run on ahead. You may get completely lost and have to start the session again. Well, before we get started, make sure you've read and understood the instructions for this pack and that you have everything ready. That tone is a stop cue. You'll hear it when there's a natural break, a chance to switch off the tape, either to do something on your own or just to have a breather. Although you can complete each session in one go, you'll probably remember more if you take several short breaks during each session. Well, let's get started. If you've looked at the manuals that came with your computer, you'll have found a lot of references to RISC OS. But just what is RISC OS? To answer that, it'll help to reflect on just why you've got a computer in the first place. Let's try an analogy. Your desktop is a general-purpose work area. You sit at your desk to do many different activities. You might spend some time doing calculations, or making lists of things to do, or writing letters or longer documents, or keeping lists of contacts and so on. Computers and computer programs have always been designed to help with these sorts of jobs, but it never felt natural with early models. You had to change the way you worked to fit the machine. Fine as far as it went, but restricting. Today's machines are very much more powerful, and the range of things you can do with them is staggering. The danger now is keeping track of what your computer is doing, and where it's hidden all your vital work. And that's where RISC OS comes in. RISC OS keeps track of all the different jobs you're working on, and lets you hop from one job to another without restriction. You concentrate on doing the work, RISC OS concentrates on keeping everything under control. So, although we'll be talking about your computer, we'll be working just as much with RISC OS. Well, let's start using it and see how it does its job. I'm assuming you've set up your computer according to the instructions in the welcome guide, and that you know where to find the various items mentioned there. In particular, check you can find the floppy disk drive, the mouse and the keyboard, check your monitor's connected up correctly, and that you know how to switch it and the computer on, but it's important that the computer is switched off at the moment. You'll also need the disks that came with your computer. Well, ideally you'll need copies of those disks, but don't worry if you haven't got as far as making copies, just use the masters until we make a copy together in a while. But be careful. Follow my instructions exactly while you're working with the masters. Stop the tape if you need more time to get your disks or your computer ready. Now, normally you'd start your computer just by switching it on. But for these introductory sessions, we're going to use a special switch-on procedure, and it's important that you follow it precisely. Otherwise, what you see on screen may not match up with what I'm describing. First, switch on your monitor. and then hold down the letter R on your keyboard, and still keeping it held down, switch on the computer itself. When it's switched on in this way, the computer goes through a set of checks and resets itself to its factory settings. So, even if you have been personalizing your computer, the R power on has reset it to its original condition. By the way, when you see the words RISC OS in the middle of your screen, you can let go of the R key. But try to remember to use that special startup sequence each time you switch on during this guide. I said just now that RISC OS lets you use your computer as naturally as you would your own desktop. And the desktop analogy will be very helpful in understanding the way RISC OS works. The large work area on the screen starts off blank. But on the shelf at the bottom, the icon bar, as it's called, you can see a number of small pictures or icons showing what you can do at the moment. Well, now obviously the analogy with your desktop isn't perfect. For example, you can't reach out and physically push things around the desktop screen with your finger. Instead, you'll be using that pointer in the middle of the screen. You push the mouse around on your desk, the mouse makes the pointer move to where you want it, and you use the buttons on the mouse to select an action, use a menu, or make adjustments. Try it now. Hold the mouse so that its cable is pointing away from you, and move the mouse around in a slow circle. As you roll the mouse across the desk, the pointer moves in the same direction on the screen. You'll be using the mouse a lot as you work with your computer, so it's important to get the feel of it straight away. Two tips to help you. Make sure the surface you're using isn't too slippery. It's important for the mouse to keep a good contact with the desk, rather than slip over it. Secondly, don't worry if you've only got a small area of desk free. If you run out of desk before the pointer reaches the edge of the screen, just pick up the mouse, move it back, and then keep rolling it. Oh, and one other thing. We'll see later what the buttons on the top of the mouse do, so try not to touch any of them just yet. Look at the icon bar at the bottom of the screen. In the group of icons on the left is one that looks like a little folder, such as you might keep paper files in. Well, in fact, that's just what the apps icon represents, the part of your computer where the most common computer applications are stored. So let's use the mouse to open that folder and find out what sort of files it contains. Move your pointer down onto the apps icon. Now for those mouse buttons. With the tip of the pointer on the icon, press on the leftmost button once and let go. When you hear the button click, a box opens up in the work area. The box acts as a kind of window into the apps area, and the window is showing you the files apps contains. Well, we'll look in detail at those files later, but let's concentrate on the window itself first. Around the edge of the window, you'll see a number of tiny icons set into the border. You click on those icons with your mouse pointer to change the way the window displays its detail. Try this. Move your pointer onto the icon in the top right-hand corner. It shows two rectangles, a small white one above a larger black one. Use the left-hand button again to click on that icon. And the window changes shape. Notice too that the icon has changed, reversing the positions of the black and white rectangles. That icon is used to change the window's size, and it works like a toggle switch. Clicking on it once expands the window to full size. Clicking on it again changes it back. Try it. Click on the icon once again, and the window is restored to its previous size and shape. Now move on to the icon at the bottom right corner of the window. It shows a large rectangle with a smaller rectangle cut into it. Well, this icon can change the window size too, but it uses a slightly different mouse technique. This time, instead of just clicking and letting go of the mouse button, press down on the left-hand button and keep it held down. Now, still holding down that button, move the mouse over the screen. As you do so, the mouse pointer drags the bottom right corner of the window around, changing its size and shape as you go. Let's make the window about a quarter of its original size. Drag the corner up and across to the left until the window shows just two file icons, one on top of the other. And let go. Well, now the window is only showing some of the app's files, and you can tell that by looking at the vertical bar running down the window's right-hand border. Before, that bar ran all the way down the border, but now it's much smaller, giving you a visual indication of how much more there is to see outside the window's range. In fact, the bar, the slider as it's called, is more than just a passive indicator. You can use it to change the view the window gives you. Try this. Move the pointer onto the slider, and now press and hold once again. This time, drag the slider down to the bottom of the border. As you do, the rest of the icons scroll by until you're left looking at the files at the end of the list. Okay, let go. And by the way, instead of dragging the slider, you can move it one step at a time by clicking on those up and down arrows at the top and bottom of the scroll area. Switch the tape off and try that for yourself. Of course, if you want the complete list of files back, you could resize the window again. But when you've set the window to a size you want, it's usually simpler to use the toggle size icon. Try it. Go up to the top right-hand corner and click on the toggle size icon. And the window expands to show all the icons. The top border is the window's title bar, and it tells you what you're looking at. At the moment, it confirms the window is showing a list of the files stored in the app's filing system, which is itself kept in a part of the computer called Resources. Don't worry about the dollar sign for the moment. We'll see what that tells us shortly. The window's title bar has another use. Move your pointer onto the bar, anywhere along it will do, and press and hold with the left mouse button, and move your mouse. This time you're dragging the whole window around the screen, and you can drag it as far as the pointer will move. Of course, you can't move the whole of the title bar off the screen, so you won't lose the window completely. Let go, and the window stays in the new position you've chosen. Well, finally, when you've seen all you want through this window, you can close it. And to do that, you use the cross icon just to the left of the title bar. Click on that cross now, and the window and all its contents disappears. Of course, the files still exist in the app's area, only your view of them has gone. Well, let's check that. Move onto the apps icon and click on it once again. And there's the app's window, more or less as we left it. Notice it's not quite the same, though. It's gone back to the size and shape it had when we first opened it, not the size and position we left it in. Here, that's not too important. But in future, when you've set up a window with the right size, the right shape, and the right position on screen, it's handy to be able to put it aside temporarily rather than closing it completely. In a sense, you probably do this with your own work now. You don't leave papers and books lying around open all the time. Your desk would soon become too cluttered. At the same time, you don't want to file them away until you've finished with them. So, you put them to one side, and perhaps leave a note to yourself to come back to them when you need to. And this is exactly the sort of thing you can do with your Acorn computer. With RISC OS, you can put things aside from time to time with a variation on the close icon. The difference is the mouse technique. Have a look at your keyboard and find the two big keys marked Shift. There's one at either side in the row above the spacebar. Now, move your pointer onto the close icon with one hand, but before you touch the mouse button, use the other hand to hold down one of those shift keys. And still holding it down, click the left mouse button on the close icon and let go. you're left with what looks like a tiny window. In fact, it's not a real window, it's an icon, in this case to represent the window you were just looking at. In a sense, the window is on hold, not fully open, but not totally closed down. If you like, to use the desktop comparison again, it's as though the files you took out of the filing cabinet to work on are now in the pending tray, and the icon stays behind to remind you to return to this window when you need to. So the icon is like a reminder on a pinboard. And in fact, the blank area of the screen is usually referred to as the pinboard. Let's reopen the window, and that involves one more mouse technique. Move your mouse pointer onto the window icon on the pinboard, and click once. Well, nothing seems to happen. But in fact, if you look closely, you'll see that something did happen. Let's try it again, and this time, watch the pointer itself closely. Click on the icon, and the pointer changes to a double arrowhead, then, after a while, changes back again. And that's the clue. We'll try it again, but this time, instead of a single click, use the left button to click twice on the icon. Click, click, and let go. Well, if nothing happens even now, you may need to practice. The important thing is that your second click must happen before the double arrowhead disappears. Try double-clicking again. Vary the speed a little. If you still have nothing, stop the tape and experiment. When you get it right, the Apps directory display reappears, this time exactly as we left it. But to end this session, let's close the window completely. Put your pointer on the Close icon once more, and this time click once on it, and we're back to where we started, ready to turn the computer off and take a break. In fact, there is a precise switch-off procedure which we'll look at in a later session, but for now, it's okay just to turn your monitor and your computer off. And I'll see you in session 2. Well, what have we covered so far? You've seen how to open a desktop window and close it, and you've used the various tools to resize it, change its shape, and move it to another part of the screen. You've also seen how to scroll or move the window around to bring hidden parts into view. You've done all this by moving the pointer with your mouse, and you've used a number of mouse techniques. You've used the mouse button in conjunction with a shift key on your keyboard. You've tried single clicking to select things, dragging or moving selected items around the screen, and double clicking to activate something. So far, we've done all this with the leftmost mouse button, and in fact, that button is referred to as the Select button. In practice, you'll probably be using the Select button most of the time, and that's certainly true of this guide, so try to remember only to use the Select button unless I specifically tell you to use another one. We've also seen that as well as the different bits of hardware, the screen, the mouse, and so on, the Acorn computer has a filing system to store the files it needs to work with. Well, perhaps it's more correct to say that we've looked at one of the filing systems. The apps window we opened earlier was actually showing what was stored in a part of the computer's memory, the famous silicon chips built into the computer's circuits. Now, there are some obvious advantages to the apps filing system. Unlike paper-based files, apps files are always there when you want them, and you can't lose them. On the other hand, you can't easily change them or add more files, and you certainly can't pass them to other people. So, luckily, it's not the only filing system your computer uses. The other major system is the disk filing system, and we'll move on to look at that next. You'll need to have the computer switched on, and you'll need two disks to hand, the application disk and the support disk. If you need to, stop the tape while you get ready. Don't forget to keep the letter R key held down while you switch the computer on, until you see the RISC OS opening screen. look down at the icon bar and find the icon that looks like the disk drive on your computer, the slot where the disks fit into the computer itself. Underneath the icon is the computer's name for that disk drive, :0. If you have a second floppy disk drive, or a hard disk fitted, you'll also see icons for them, as well as the computer's names for them, normally :1 for a second floppy drive, and IDE disk 4 for a hard disk. Pick up the disk marked Application. I want you to insert that disk into the :0 drive. Hold the disk by the label, with the label uppermost, and slide it gently into the drive. You'll feel a click when it's fitted properly. This disk contains additional applications files. So, using the office analogy again, you've just put the equivalent of a small filing cabinet full of files into your computer. To see the files stored on this disk, you'll have to use the mouse and pointer again. But this time, move on to the :0 disk icon at the bottom of the screen, and click the left button to select it. As you do, RiskOS has a look at the disk, then opens up a window to display the applications it contains. Well, let's have a quick look at the other disk. Press in the disk eject button on the disk drive to take the application disk out, and replace it with the support disk. When you've done that, click on the :0 drive icon on the icon bar. And this time, notice how the pointer changes to an hourglass symbol as RiskOS reads the disk data. With a full disk like this, that takes a few seconds, and the hourglass is a way of saying, please wait a moment. Now, each window you open partly covers up the previous one. And if you wanted to compare the contents of different disks, you might want to move and resize the windows to separate them. Even without doing that, you can see quite easily that the contents of these disks are quite different, and that there are several different types of icon shapes. Well, we'll find out more about icon shapes as we go, but let's focus on just one of the disks. First of all, move up and click on the close icon for the first window you opened, leaving just the display of the support disk visible. Earlier, I described a disk as being like a filing cabinet. That's not a bad analogy. But the window you're looking at now only shows the things on the top of the cabinet, and not all of them will be files. As you can tell by their icons, at least one of them is a folder. And a RiskOS folder can contain either files or still more folders. Let's look closer and you'll see what I mean. One of the nice things about RiskOS is the easy way it lets you rummage around a disk until you find what you're looking for. Try this. Find the folder icon called Guide. If you can't see it in the window, it could be that the window is too small. If that's the case, click on the Toggle Size icon at the top right of the screen to expand it to full size. Now move your pointer onto that folder icon and click on it. Single-clicking on a folder icon selects it. The icon changes color. But to open the folder, you have to double-click on it. So this time, double-click on that folder icon. Double-clicking on a folder icon opens another window showing the contents of that folder. As you can see, this folder contains two more folders called Data Files and Demo Files. Move on to the Data Files folder, and double-click on it to see what it contains. Well, the Data Files folder contains three files, File 1, File 2, and File 3. We've now created quite a stack of windows, each overlapping the last. The title bars of the successive windows show how far we've traveled from the top of the cabinet. For example, look at the title bar of the last window you opened. It reads adfs://support.dollar.guide.datafiles. And that tells you that the files we're looking at now are in a folder called Data Files, which is itself in a folder called Guide, which is at the top of the cabinet, that's the dollar sign, held on a disk called Support. But really, the filing cabinet analogy is breaking down a bit here. What we've called folders are more often referred to as directories and subdirectories. So with this example, the disk Support has a subdirectory called Guide, which itself has a subdirectory off it called Data Files, and the three files, File 1, File 2, and File 3, are in that subdirectory. Now, we created this structure when we designed the disk, but when you come to organize your own work, you'll have to decide on a logical directory structure that suits the sort of work you're keeping on the disk. It's worth planning it when you first set up the disk, and we'll be looking at setting up new disks later in the program. And as you can see, rummaging around a disk like this can get confusing. But remember that the Windows title bar details the exact path you followed to find the files you're looking at, starting from the very top, indicated by the dollar sign. And there are other window features to help you keep track of what's where. Put your pointer on the title bar of the first window you opened, the one that's covered up by all the rest, and click on it. Clicking on a window's title bar brings it instantly to the top of the stack, and you can bring up any window on the screen, providing you can see its title bar. And you can reverse the process. In the very top left corner, just next to the close icon you used before, is the Put to Back icon. Click on that, and you've sent the window right to the back of the pile where it was before. One more thing. Leave your pointer on that window at the bottom of the stack, but don't click on it yet. Now, so far we've used the left button to select everything. And as I said earlier, that button is normally called the Select button. But I want to show you something different. This time, get ready with the right button, and press and hold with that button on that window's title bar, and now drag it around the screen with the right-hand mouse button. As you can see, with that button, the window keeps its position in the stack, but you can still drag it around the screen without disturbing the other windows. So the right-hand button works in a similar way to the Select button, but it adjusts the effect, and that button is called the Adjust button. For now, let's close these windows down using the Select button again. Go to the Close icon for each window and click on it. Well, it doesn't have to look as confusing as that. Remember, you can resize each of those windows or move them around the screen so that they're not overlapping, or bring them to the front and send them to the back as much as you need. We'll be opening a number of windows during this guide, and I'll leave you to make sure everything's kept neat and tidy. On the other hand, you don't have to have windows showing if you don't need them. Try this. Open up a directory display of the Support disk again. Remember, move your pointer onto the :0 disk icon and click on it. Let's look a bit more at the Adjust button. Move your pointer onto the folder or directory icon Guide, but don't click on it yet. We've seen that clicking with Select on that icon would open up a new window, but instead, get ready with the right-hand Adjust button again, and double-click on the Guide folder icon. This time, as the new window opens, the old window closes. Move onto the Data Files directory icon, and, using Adjust again, double-click to open a window for that directory. As you do, the previous one closes. But notice that even though the previous windows have closed, you can still see the path you've followed in the title bar, so you won't get lost. Adjust works the other way too. Move your pointer onto the Close icon. If you clicked on that icon with Select, you'd close the window and end up with a blank pinboard. Instead, click on it with Adjust. And this time, as the Data Files window closes, Adjust has simultaneously opened up a window for its parent directory, the Guide directory. Now, click with Adjust again to close this window. And you're back to where you started. And incidentally, because this is the start point for all the directories on a disk, you'll often hear it referred to as the root, that's R-O-O-T, directory. So, now you've seen that the Select button usually starts an action, and Adjust has the same sort of effect, but with variations. What about the third button, the middle one? Move into the middle of the directory display, and click with the middle button. You get a box headed Filer, containing a list of options which are available to you at this point. It's a sort of menu, and the middle button is called the Menu button. And it may help to remember M for menu and middle. Pull the mouse pointer down over the options. As you do, the available options light up. Notice, though, that not all are available at this point. For example, you can't open the parent directory because you're already at the root directory. Let's see another sort of menu. Move down onto the disk icon for :0 on the icon bar, and click with the middle menu button on that. The first menu disappears, and a completely different menu opens, giving you a set of disk actions. So, the effect of the menu button depends on the position of your pointer on the screen when you click the button. Let's try it once more. Move your pointer onto the pinboard, any blank or dead area of the screen will do, and click with menu once more. This time you get the pinboard menu. And if you ever open up a menu by mistake, you can clear it by clicking on a blank part of the pinboard with Select. Try that. Move onto a blank space, and click with Select, and the menu disappears. And by the way, that trick works to undo most mouse actions. Try it as you go along. But it's time for another break. Click on the Close icon for the Support Disk Directory window to clear the work area. Then press in the Disk Eject button on the disk drive. Take the disk out. And switch off your computer and monitor. And before we finish, we've talked a lot about directories in this session. Directories are vital to the way RiskOS works, but they can be confusing at first. So if you're still not sure how directories and subdirectories fit together, you might like to have a look in your welcome guide before you start the next session. There are some illustrations there which may help. But don't worry if it still doesn't make sense. We'll be doing a lot more work with directories during the rest of this guide. Well now, wind this tape on to the end, and we'll take another break.